Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're continuing with the chapter Ambarish Maharaj offended by Durvasa Muni. And we are doing one text 65, which we can chant responsively. Ye Daragara Putrapta Pranam Vitam Mimam Param Hitpamam Sharanam Yattaha Katham Tam Styaktam Utsahe Ye Daragara Putrapta Pranam Vitam Mimam Param Hitpamam Sharanam Yataham Katam Tam Styaktam Utsahem. Ye Daragara Putrapta Pranam Vitam Imam Param Hitamam Sharanam Yata Katam Tam Styaktam Utsahe Ye Dara Gara Putrapta Paranam Vitam Imam Param Hitpatmam Sharanam Hata Katam Tam Styaktam Utsahe Ye Dara Gara Putrapta Panam Mitam Imam Param Hitpamam Saranam Yata Katan Tam Styaktam Utsahe Ye Dara Gara Putrapta Pranam Vitam Imam Param Hitpamam Sharanam Yata Katam Tam Styaktam Utsahe. The word for word translation. Those devotees of mine who Dham, wife, Agara, house, Putra, children, sons, Apta, relatives, society, Pranam, even life, Vitam, wealth, Imam, all these, Param, elevation to the heavenly planets, or becoming one by merging into Brahman. Hitpa, giving up all these ambitions and paraphernalia. Mam, unto me, Sharanam, shelter. Yata, having taken. Katam, how. Tan, such persons. Tyaktam, to give them up. Utsahe, I can be enthusiastic in that way. It is not possible. So the translation by Srila Prabhupada, since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me, without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by the words Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. Thus he is the well-wisher of the Brahmanas. Durvasa Muni was certainly a very great Brahmana, but because he was a non-devotee, he could not sacrifice everything in devotional service. Great mystic yogis are actually self-interested. The proof is that when Durvasa Muni created a demon to kill Maharaj Ambarish, the king, staying fixed in his place, praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depending solely and wholly on him, whereas when Durvasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshan Chakra by the supreme will of the Lord, he was so perturbed that he fled all over the world and tried to take shelter in every nook and corner of the universe. At last, in fear of his life, he approached Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was so interested in his own body that he wanted to kill the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, he did not have very good intelligence. And how can an unintelligent person be delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The Lord certainly tries to give all protection to his devotees who have given up everything for the sake of serving him. Another point in this verse is that attachment to Dharagara Putrapta, home, wife, children, friendship, society, and love, is not the way to achieve the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is attached to hearth and home for material pleasure cannot become a pure devotee. Sometimes a pure devotee may have a habit or attraction for wife, children, and home, but at the same time want to serve the Supreme Lord to the best of his ability. For such a devotee, the Lord makes a special arrangement to take away the objects of his false attachment and thus free him from attachment to wife, home, children, friends, and so on. This is special mercy bestowed upon the devotee to bring him back home, back to Godhead. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pashacha Deshatarine Vancha Kalpat Rubyascha Kripa Sindubya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebio Vaishnebio Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this particular verse today is a statement made by Lord Vishnu, such that he expresses that at no time could he cease his relationship with his devotee, particularly Maharaj Ambarish. We can infer that, since he's the topic of conversation and the statement is made to Durvasa Muni. So he asks a rhetorical question. And the question is, the rhetorical question is asked to emphasize the point for his unceasing connection with his pure devotee. So that unceasing connection is due to the service of the pure devotee. And being such that the devotee has made a choice for the service over any material improvement in his life. And in addition, Lord Vishnu emphasizes that the pure devotee relinquishes a home, a wife, children, relatives, even his life, in order to serve him, Lord Vishnu. So, Srila Prabhupada, he points out the second part of Lord Vishnu's rhetorical expression. He says, attachment to home, wife, children, friendship, society, and love is not the way to achieve the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, on the one hand, you're having Lord Vishnu particularly pointing to or emphasizing what the pure devotee has done just in order to serve him, what he's given up. And Srila Prabhupada is taking the other side and saying, well, those very same things or attachment to them is not the way to achieve the favor of the Supreme Lord. So putting one's devotion in those places, meaning in one's wife or one's child or one's home or one's relatives, and in order to obtain pleasure out of that, which basically is something that's occupying physical space, or it's satisfying some bodily need that needs some satisfaction, it actually is precluding the possibility of attaining that status of devotion to the Lord. And because that status of devotion to the Lord is characterized by purity, means that the purity is that the devotion's been put in one place to Lord Vishnu. So now, the very definition of this characteristic of a pure devotee is full engagement. The entire being is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So this means that their mind, it can't be diverted in any way from the lotus feet of the Lord, as kind of immovable. It just stays in one spot. So Lord Krishna, he expresses this particular characteristic that's present in the pure devotee, and we find it in Bhagavad Gita 10.9, where he says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. I'll read the Sanskrit since it's very integral connection to this particular verse today. Machita matgata prana bodayana boyanta parasparam katayanta chamam nityam tushyanti cham ramanti cha. So in this particular narration, Maharaj Ambarish, he's revealing that defining characteristic of a pure devotee, because there's a description given of him which fits perfectly with this characteristic that Lord Krishna gives of the pure devotee. He's described in this way. Maharaj Ambarish gave up all the attachment to household affairs, wives, children, friends and relatives, to the best, and carries on, so we just heard about that part, but he gave up other attachments, which is part of his milieu, to the best of powerful elephants, to beautiful chariots, carts, horses, and inexhaustible jewels, and to ornaments, garments, and an inexhaustible treasury. He gave up attachment to all of them, regarding them as temporary and material. And that was earlier on in this chapter, in the 27th verse. Now, this particular view that Maharaj Ambarish is holding, meaning that he's seen all these accoutrements of his royal position as something that's very it's occupying physical space, so it's separate from him. It's temporary. It's there. It may not be there. I mean, being attached to beautiful elephants, the elephant has a certain lifespan. Then that beautiful elephant will not exist any longer, or the beautiful jewel or collection of jewelry one may have. It's functional for a certain period of time, and then, a stone gets lost from a particular brooch, or a ring is misplaced, those kind of things. So there's understanding. It's temporary. And so the fact that he's holding this view, though, indicates that he's made a choice for devotional service over any kind of material improvement. And this is something very interesting. I was looking at this and reflecting a lot that somehow, by some kind mercy, I think I've got to learn this lesson a little bit recently. My husband and I were called to come to Kishori Temple, and we were residing in a comfortable home where everything was arranged perfectly. All the furniture was exactly as we liked it. The floors were exactly as we liked it. The walls were exactly as we liked it. Everything was, exactly right. Correct amount of breeze in the house, the correct amount of space. Everything was ordered according to what the senses needed. Well, naturally, we're worshipping also our deity, Govinda Hari, and so we viewed the place as the deity's property. But we got this interesting shift that we were, in terms of the situation we were put in. We had to come because of our natural response and desire to come and serve as to the best of our capacity at Kishori. We happily agreed to whatever arrangement was made, so we found ourselves in a situation where nothing was to the liking of the senses, if one analyzed it, meaning that there were already pre-existing objects in the space, and the place was not perfectly well taken care of, and a lot of artificial material. So the senses were not happy, but because of the necessity to perform the service, one accepted the situation. And I realized after a year and a half, because now at the time Krishna's allowed for an arrangement to come where we can move into a space that we've chosen again. But having gone through this time of being in a place that's not aesthetically pleasing to the senses, and also not being, it not being necessary to actually put thought and energy into how to improve the space because it's a temporary arrangement, it allowed for a good amount of detachment. And so I was actually appreciating this point that, one actually, if one's putting service first, then material improvement doesn't seem so important. So I learned the lesson this way through being put into that situation, but it really struck home. So I think a reading of Maharaj Ambarish's particular a choice on a very elevated level for devotional service, taking into account his being permanently in a perfect situation on the material level, meaning, you know, all his excellent elephants, horses, jewels, wives, children, perfect palace, but then choosing always devotional service over any kind of, you know, greater acquisition, greater improvement of the material things, just allowed me to appreciate in my own minuscule way and humble way, or small way, I shouldn't say fully humble, but small way, how actually the urge for material improvement is not even there if one is actually looking to perform devotional service. Now, Maharaj Ambarish, he had all these possessions, and they all occupied physical space, his palace, his wife, his children, his friends. But all his pleasure didn't find its repose in those objects. It always lay in devotion to the Supreme Lord. So now there's an analogy that's used to explain how this devotion to the Supreme Lord is comparable to eating. Because we're going to look at this, how you're able to find satisfaction in something that's truly not material. I mean, when one talks about devotion, it's extremely subtle. It's not something you can touch exactly in the same way that you may be able to touch a jewel. So, Srila Jiva Goswami gives an explanation of this analogy that's used to compare the satisfaction that comes with practicing devotion to the Supreme Lord to the satisfaction that comes from eating. And it makes it kind of understandable. So, both, this is Srila Jiva Goswami's explanation, both eating and bhakti take the form of giving pleasure. So it's a very subtle result that comes. It's internal pleasure. Now, experience of the Supreme Lord and nourishment in eating are comparable in that they both sustain one's life. One cannot do without either of them. And then there's a result that happens. There's detachment from material things. And this is by the practice of bhakti. So natural detachment from material things comes. And it's comparable to hunger subsiding or ceasing. And the result of both of those is that craving then is stopped. So in the case of bhakti, the craving for something material is stopped by just practicing devotion to the Supreme Lord. And in the other case, with eating, that craving for further edible items is stopped because there's the satisfaction. So there's a nice verse that points to this, and it's spoken by one of the nine Yogendras to King Nimi or Maharaj Nimi. And so the Yogendra Kavi says, devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things, these three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's interesting. It's just automatically it's happening. And this is something that I found, because if I had not been put into my particular situation, I have to relate it personally so as to kind of make it understandable, because it's a very deep concept. If I hadn't been put into a situation where my natural urge to improve, better order, material space had not been like that, I would naturally not have had this very direct experience that just not actually working on material improvement even brings detachment from the material space, because now I'm quite peaceful with it, which is very interesting for me. And it has to do with, I bring it up because in this lifetime, the senses are designed to be very aesthetically conscious. So it's quite a huge leap. The particular way in which detachment from other things takes place is that one trains the mind to see everything as an expansion of the opulence of Lord Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada puts it this way, that when a pure devotee sees a material object, something that's occupying physical space, he's immediately eager to take that object and to use it to please Krishna in some way, for the pleasure of Krishna. So just by desiring to use everything to serve Krishna in some way, or to give pleasure to Krishna in some way, and to not take anything for himself, the devotee becomes strengthened by the transcendental or purified mode of goodness. And in this way, he's able to achieve that topmost religious principle of directly serving the Lord, which was Maharaj Ambarish. I mean, he was serving so directly that the very situation that Jarasa Muni finds himself in with the Sudarshan disc at his back is because Lord Vishnu actually gave that disc to Maharaj Ambarish to allow him to protect his kingdom. So close was his serving of the Lord that the Lord personally gave him his disc. Now, when a devotee isn't desiring something for himself, means he's not desiring anything to satisfy his own senses. So, now, of course, there may be a flow of desires, some desire for something. And in the case of kings generally, there's a desire to, to acquire huge amounts of land, or to take over other countries or other states or other kingdoms. So, because this is the nature of a kshatriya, they need to control and rule. So even if there is that kind of flow of desires, but the devotee isn't satisfying them, which we hear from Maharaj Ambarish was pretty much his case, the fact that he wasn't so engaged in that, at least we're not hearing, in that kind of acquisition of other kingdoms, or even having to, think about protecting his own kingdom from other invaders, means that peace is achieved, as opposed to, let's say, the personality, if it was the case of a king, actually going out and acting on those desires. Naturally, it's not very peaceful. It's quite graphic in the case of a kshatriya who's ruling, that conquest involves bloodshed, wars, the exact antithesis of peace. So, and we hear this in the Bhagavad Gita in 272, that the person who's becoming peaceful is not the person who's striving to satisfy desires. And the interesting thing is that even if the devotee has those desires, different things to be acquired or obtained, or to improve his material situation, he actually doesn't need anything. This is the very interesting thing. And the reason nothing is actually needed is because the Lord's fulfilling all the material necessities. And we find this just by what I brought up a minute ago, that with Maharaj Ambarish, he received from Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna's or Lord Vishnu's disc. So the necessity that was there that needed attention in his case, in the role that he was playing, was that of, you know, defending his kingdom or self-defense. And that was taken care of by Lord Krishna just by the presence of the Sudarshan's chakra in Maharaj Ambarish's kingdom. So the explanation that's given for the this kind of non-responsiveness to material desire is that the person who's conscious of Krishna and engaged in that relationship of devotion is actually feeling very full within himself. So there isn't some sort of emptiness that needs to be fulfilled externally. And so this, and he's always very steady in his activities. and just because of that steadiness in devotional activities, there's no disturbance that comes from desires to satisfy the senses. And, well, I'll bring up a personal example here. There was a period of time, I recall, I would be preparing classes, and, you know, it was so dangerous, I used to think, because preparing classes on the computer meant that there's access to the internet at the same time. So then, you know, I'd get stuck somewhere, and I'd think, oh, well, I'll just distract myself for a little bit, and then, you know, switch channels, so to speak, and go to some shopping site, and then go back to the class. And at one point, I realized it was very bad to give in to that desire, because then, you know, it's building up a habit. So at one point, I started praying frantically, because I thought, now I've got into a habit, and how am I going to break this habit? So I started praying frantically. And somehow the kindness, I was conscious, it was the kindness of my spiritual master intervening at one moment where I understood some help was, transcendental help was coming, and I was actually able to then resist. So now I don't have the problem anymore, but it was dangerous just to create such a habit. So, so the steadiness in the activity has to keep going on, but I would add creating a little diversion habit is not a good idea. So Maharaj Ambarish is described as actually gradually having given up his material desires. And just by virtue of performing the devotional service he was performing, with all the accompanying austerities, because naturally there's austerity with performing any devotional service. I mean, I find that, you know, on Saturday, sometimes I sort of smile because I see it becomes very peaceful outside, because that mode of passion is quietened down and you can see people are getting ready to go to the beach and there's a whole relaxed mood in the atmosphere. And I always smile because I think, for me, it's work. So I sit down at the computer and, you know, it's class preparation. And then I think, well, there's some austerity involved, because, you know, it's not that I'm thinking, ah, yes, well, let me go and bask in the sunlight or hear the lap of the waves. Rather, it's, well, no, it's class preparation time. So there's some austerity involved. And and for Maharaj Ambarish, there was also austerity because, you know, surrounded by all the opulence and no doubt all the incredible beauty of residing in a palace and all the incredible wealth that comes with such a residence and such a position, his particular austerity was, you know, focused on his deity and decorating the deity or even just cleaning the temple where his deity was, or doing something very simple like just going to the Ganges and the Yamuna to bring water for the deity, or just performing artic many times. So there's austerity involved because you have to block out other demands or the senses wanting to go in other directions, or the demands of relatives, friends, for participation in other activities. So this was Maharaj Ambarish. He performed those necessary austerities. And I'm sure that being in such a position, it must be quite extreme, one could say, the austerities. I mean, my simple austerity where I just, have to fight with my mind a little bit, in that case, in that situation, it must be huge. I can't imagine. Now, there's a parallel example of somebody who also qualified himself in this way for that kind of connection with Lord Vishnu, and that's of Bharat Maharaj. And Sukadev Goswami describes him in a very similar way. So he's talking to Parikshit Maharaj, and he says, "My dear King, the activities of Bharat Maharaj are wonderful. He gave up everything difficult for others to give up. He gave up his kingdom, his wife, and his family. His opulence was so great that even the demigods envied it, yet he gave it up. It was quite befitting a great personality like him to be a great devotee. He could renounce everything because he was so attracted to the beauty, opulence, reputation, knowledge, strength, and renunciation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Krishna is so attractive that one can give up all desirable things for his sake. Indeed, even liberation is considered insignificant to those whose minds are attracted to the loving service of the Lord." And that's in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, in the 14th chapter. So a similar kind of description of a king who had that capacity through his devotion to not be attracted to all the material objects, the I guess even relationships that could be on a material level, because the greater attraction was the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the wealth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it's exceeded anything in the material realm. So the prayer that's offered by Bharat Maharaj at the time of his quitting his body as a deer illustrates this connection with Lord Vishnu. So that connection remained, and this is what he says: "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is sacrifice personified. He gives the result of ritualistic activity. He is the proprietor of religious systems, the personification of mystic yoga, the source of all knowledge, the control of the entire creation, and the supersoul in every living entity. He is beautiful and attractive. I am quitting this body, offering obeisances unto him, and hoping that I may perpetually engage in his transcendental loving service." So both great personalities had this attraction to Lord Krishna. So they gave up reposing their devotion in material things, in their material possessions. And this is, of course, in stark contrast to material functioning, where this attraction, the attraction is always for the material possessions. And this attraction to Krishna brought complete satisfaction. And this satisfaction from acting and staying with the attraction to Lord Krishna, it is what brings the real liberation. And liberation was being sought by Durvasa Muni by emerging into the impersonal Brahman, but the real liberation is actually that attraction to Krishna that brings such great satisfaction. So these were some thoughts. If there's anything that might expand our discussion. Hare Krishna. I can hear.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you for your class. It's condensed nectar. I have a few different questions. The first one is just a point about how you mentioned that the devotees' minds are always, they're very firmly, unmovably fixed on Krishna. And it made me think, Srila Prabhupada is sitting right before us and he's never looking anywhere but the deities. That just made me think about that. Mm. And the next thing is, I just wanted to know if maybe you could tell me more about Durasa Muni, and like where he's coming from. I don't really hear about Durasa Muni. Like, I don't know, is he one of the great sages or something like that? Or like, where is he coming from? Who is his father? Things like that.
I don't have all the facts in front of me, Subal. Perhaps you can help me with Durasa Muni's background?
And the next one, I'm just thinking in terms of not to be, we hear it a lot, especially Prahlad Maharaj, of not being attached to family, wife, home, and the rest of it, those things. I'm just curious how to perceive maybe not being attached to, I guess, like, I'm just trying to put myself in a different perspective, or like seeing, let's say, society or whatever group, maybe your family, maybe just some kind of friends, but they're devotees. So in that sense, being attached to them in relation to Krishna, is that'd be okay, but unrelated to Krishna is not okay, is it?
So the question being asked is, looking at this question of not being attached to wife, children, etc., then would it be that being attached to a certain category of friends may not be okay, but the attachment to devotee friends, that would be in order, would it not be, is the question that's been asked. Well, it's a very subtle thing that we're looking at when we're looking at a bond of affection or a bond of caring or love. It's a very subtle thing. It's not that one sees like a string from one heart going to another heart, like physically, but that is what's actually happening. There's something that's connecting one to another human being through the heart. And if that connection is with, let's say, certain friends that one has some history with, because often we grow up, we go to school, our study place, maybe even our neighborhood. One forms certain friendships because of proximity, because of being in the same physical space, and having the common ground. We're in the same class, we're in the same neighborhood. So one forms those friendships, and then one takes to the process of diverting all of one's energies rather to the process of bhakti and making the connection to Lord Krishna through serving him. And then one comes into contact with a whole other group of persons trying to do the same thing. So there's a common ground again. So naturally, one forms friendship because we have something in common. We're all trying to serve Krishna. So now if one were to compare the two groups, one then looks at what the nature is of the bond, that connection between the hearts that's there. In the case of the older friends, one will find that one may even feel a little bit of affection for some persons because of that proximity over the years and some shared experiences and some shared understanding. But then the way to test that relationship is to actually introduce something of one's I guess new practice, and one may express it in some simple way, but introduce the idea that one has now put a higher purpose in what for one's life in the picture. And often one finds that when one tests that relationship, suddenly there's no affection whatsoever on the other person's part. One discovers that in fact, the person that one had shared experiences with or something in common with, the person may actually suddenly be outright rude, because whatever their view is of Krishna is then going to actually come your way. So I've had different experiences with different friends from the past, and with those with some spiritual inclination or some being better read, the response has been where they reveal their impersonal understanding. Then I think, oh good, the person's read something, very nice. There's some opportunity to look into this more. The connection can be maintained. Then you have a different kind of friend who will actually bring out their all their hatred for secular religion, because some sort of pictures formed in the mind from exposure to the general population that is practicing, and you learn the person's an atheist. Like, it comes out very strongly, no. So then, you know, you have to evaluate the relationship. Can you maintain a relationship with somebody who is telling you that they're an atheist? You know, is it going to be possible? So then you think, well, the person is now telling me that the person that I'm trying to be close to is not to their liking. Now, that's a bit of a problem. You know, it's a bit of a problem. I mean, where's the integrity going to be then? Because I'm not going to change my adherence to my higher purpose of trying to serve Lord Krishna as the most dearmost friend. And the atheistic friend is directly opposed to Lord Krishna. So then I have to reevaluate that relationship, because then the material comforting part, it doesn't hold up to the fundamental belief system having to be maintained. Now, the relationship with the devotee or the fellow devotees of Lord Krishna is quite a different thing. Attachment to those relationships is such that it's one of the things that help a pure devotee, and in terms of, it's something that they always want to do, to be able to have conversations with like-minded devotees. So it's uplifting, it's purifying. So to actually have friends that are also making it the goal of their life to serve Lord Krishna is incredibly strengthening. And it can clear so many blockages in the heart, like ones that one may not even have known were there. So it is the greatest boon one could ever have, to be able to have friendships with those holding the same goal that one has oneself of reposing one's devotion in Lord Krishna.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit better than associating with atheists. Thank you.
That would be the conclusion to that statement. Thank you. Yes, indeed. Quite a bit better.
It's got both things. This is from Bhagavatam, just reinforcing that third canto, text chapter 25, text 20. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door of liberation. Mm. And then Gokulananda Prabhu corrected the appearance of Durvasa Muni. So he sent the quote. What is the Durvasa Muni's birth?
Thank you. Oh, no,
thank you.
So there's the response, you got it in.
Gokulananda is omniscient, yes. Jai Gokulananda Prabhu.
Thank you.
So, Durvasa Muni's birth. Translation: Anusuya, the wife of Atri Muni, gave birth to three very famous sons, Soma, Dattatreya, and Durvasa, who were partial representations of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma. Soma was a partial representation of Lord Brahma. Dattatreya was a partial representation of Lord Vishnu, and Durvasa was a partial representation of Lord Shiva. Mm. Bhagavatam 4.1.15. Jai.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Arjuna Mataji. Thank you for a nice class. And I would like to tell my experience about this another point, this verse about attachment to Dharagara Putrapta.
Attachment to?
To Dharagara Putrapta. This is the another point. Mm-hmm. In my experience, it was attachment to my family, to be more detailed to my father, because before, I don't know, it been quite a few years ago, I heard about to be careful about attachments, and I was trying to figure it out which is my main attachment and to maybe work on. And once I realized that my relationship to, like, with my father is the most important attachment to me, and I thought without him I cannot even survive. And I remember I looked at Krishna, I was thinking, wow, you know, my weakest part, if something happened to my father, I'll be very miserable. So I better work on this relationship. I better be more careful. And I remember once I started to pay attention and to be trying to be a little bit detached. Not like I hadn't forced myself to be detached, but still, I was thinking, if something really happened to him, I don't want to really suffer so much. So once I start thinking about it, I start process all my thoughts, all my actions. And after some time, that happened that I moved out from his place, because at that time I was living with him. Then after some time, I moved to the temple. And now I realize that Krishna gives that power and strength to be able to detach of things if there is that some desire for. So I'm really glad that happened. We still have great relationship, but I don't think that's going to be the end of the world if, for instance, my father will leave his body. So that was
well, thank you for sharing your thoughts. Just it's an interesting thing. I mean, in some sense, your description is of coming to a point of feeling detached, even through not having physical proximity. Well, you know, detachment is something that happens naturally without one even trying, if one is approaching the object of attachment with the proper consciousness. So, or proper consciousness meaning the consciousness that is the reality. So the reality always is that every living entity has super soul residing within. And so one is respectful to every single living entity. But then the fact that one starts to look to a particular entity to sort of bring satisfaction or happiness to oneself, I mean, there's generally some sort of selfish motive in some attachment. And you see this with family members. The attachment has some selfish motive because when the desired thing is not obtained from the family member, generally there's some ill feeling or bad energy that happens within the environment. If one were approaching each family member as a person that has super soul residing within, is a person to be served, to be treated respectfully and with care, and that includes other persons, even other than one's family members, but one has a special kind of bond with family members because there's a long history of connection with the family member, many interactions, and they nurtured one and fed one and protected one in growing up. So it's a different kind of relationship, I mean a more personal kind of relationship. But then if one actually just shifts one's focus to that, the actions one's performing towards that person, mother, father, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, whoever one is attached to or has that long history with and a certain indebtedness to, that one is actually performing those actions as a service to Lord Krishna. So one is looking on a higher plane. So the mundane level is, oh, yes, I'm going to do something for my parent. You know, I'm going to cook a meal for my parent. But one is thinking, I'm actually going to be cooking this meal. It will be for my parent, but I'm going to do this meal, cooking it for Lord Krishna, so that then I can actually serve the remnants of Krishna to my family member. It's a whole other consciousness. It's no longer on one level. It's, you know, it's tied in with the reality, which is that all one's actions are done for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. So then when one is actually thinking in that kind of way, then it's natural that one takes a step back. One's not actually anymore thinking on a kind of selfish plane. Because the selfish plan is, I'm cooking a meal for my parent must enjoy this meal, my parent will be pleased with me, we'll be you know, laughing and joking together, everything's well. It's not just on that plane, it takes on the transcendental dimension where I'm performing my duty towards my parent in trying to reciprocate in some way for all the services that that parent has done for me throughout my life, as I was growing up and being nurtured and cared for and protected by parent. So I'm performing a service for this parent as a kind of duty, but at the same time, I'm performing that duty for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. So I'm going to perform that duty really well because I'm performing it for Lord Krishna, because Lord Krishna is my master. Lord Krishna is the personality that I wish to please with this action. Then when one is thinking like that, automatically you're performing your duty well, you're pleasing the parent, but more important is you're pleasing Lord Krishna, and automatically by having that kind of consciousness, there's detachment that's happening naturally because the service is being done for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's, one doesn't even have to try. It just is a shift in thinking. One needs to remember who one's serving. Yeah, because otherwise one is, that those strings between the heart are causing so much entanglement and suffering. I mean, I recall I grew up with parents that I was not so attached to, and they were not so attached to me. Or perhaps my father went through the motions of being attached, but we understood that it was somehow odd that we'd landed up with each other in this lifetime. We, from early on, we agreed that this was odd. We were not in accord. But when I had finished university, I recall I'd had a table in the room where I was residing in my parents' home, and I asked my father, would it be in order if I moved that table, because I had rented a big warehouse, and I asked if I could use the if I could take the table to the warehouse where I was residing. And to my surprise, my father completely resisted. You know, this was a piece of property within his house and it could not be moved. And I was completely amazed. I thought, this is a person who's expressing some sentimental feelings towards his child, but when it comes to a material object in his home being moved to where that child is moved to, that was not possible. And I laughed at that time. I thought, well, now this really makes me question, what is the depth of feeling here? You know, what is more important? So, yeah, so it's that sort of thing. The external things we do that give us some happiness on some level, there's some suffering involved. So for my father, it would have been suffering if I had moved one of his physical objects out of his house. For me, it was some suffering to see that the person was so attached to a material object that he couldn't even part with it for me. And I'd grown up with that object. I'd used that object for years and years. So it's like that. You have to actually just remember who you're performing any action for. It's a desire to perform something to please Lord Krishna. So one does one's duty to please Lord Krishna. One does some simple acts of even caring for one's body to please Lord Krishna. That's the purpose of one's life, to please Lord Krishna. I mean, there is no other purpose, and that's the reality, because we are completely bound to Lord Krishna. So, anyway, thank you very much for the class. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai.
Thank you.